So this one only has like 113 slides.
Oh, you don't
need prayer for this one, then.
As the one where you had 200 that you needed help.
Yeah, there was no... That would have had him in a miracle. I tell you what, Marty, could you lead us in a prayer as we begin?
Yeah, I sure will. Our Father, we're joyful tonight for the chance we have to be together and to learn, and for the health we have, and for the good weather, the affluence all around us, for Danny and his ability and research, and for the fellowship and the unity that we have here and the joy we have with one another. We give you the praise for all these things and give you the glory for the plan you've put in place for the local church and the work that it does. Be with us through this time. Help us to learn and build our faith based on the things that are said, and following that to worship with a full heart in praise to you. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thank you, Marty. All right, so like I say, today's class, or this particular class, we're looking at some archaeological finds, and really we're just looking at two archaeological finds. One is the Dead Sea Scrolls at Qumran, and then the other is down in Egypt at Oxyparissus, which is like town of fish or fish town or something like that. All right, so anyway, we've gone. So here we are. This is the last class, by the way. Okay, so next Sunday, be here for the prayer. Yes?
Are these pictures downloading?
Yes, they are. Well, these aren't yet, but I have been uploading the PowerPoints. So they're on the site. So you do the Bible class and you can get them.
So we can go through it at our own pace.
Yes. Since mine is a bit unreasonable. Yes, you can. Okay, so discovery of the Dead Sea Scrolls there by the Dead Sea was discovered in 47, basically about 11 caves or so. This is kind of a recreation of what the guys that first found it. Basically, my understanding is whatever story you heard or that was told originally about the finding is totally false. That these guys weren't shepherds, whatever, that they were possibly kind of running and did a little bit of smuggling or something and kind of were trying to look for a place to hide. But anyway, this is kind of that first look into the cave. So these are kind of the famous kind of containers. I meant to bring those with me, but anyway, you ever take how we study the Bible, I bring those out. So here, you know, the 11K, so here's the Qumran, and it's kind of just down there on the top part. And the Essenes, there's some people kind of tried to stir up and says it was somebody besides the Essenes, but it was the Essenes. And this kind of comes, this was, you know, we were talking about in between the Testament, or in between the Testament, we were talking about sort of how do you deal with a Hellenistic culture. I mean, the Greeks were pushing down and wanting everybody to act like Greeks, which really, giving your God's people, you know, you had this whole thing with idolatry, the last thing you want to be is, you know, act like a Greek, because you're sanctified, you're set apart people. And so there was sort of a different kind of response to all of this, also a different response to Antiochus Epiphanes. But that's where you get the Maccabeans, you get the revolt. The Essenes said, hold on a second. This is the wrong guys in the priesthood, you know, are doing the priest duties and things like that. So they sort of separated themselves to a large extent and basically were saying, you know, just giving them a hard time. I mean, they were right. It was really the wrong folks, and all the things that the Hasmoneans were doing and all that fussing was wrong. But what it did, we'll hit back through this. But
you mean to say they were right in rejecting the priesthood of the time?
Yes.
But they weren't necessarily right in all their practices and their beliefs and their messianic hopes and rituals and things like
that.
I
mean, you know, it's kind of interesting. The Essenes, of course, don't mention Jesus, and Jesus doesn't mention them. They're there. And part of it is they're kind of separated. They separated themselves. And then they got into the rule. I mean, they had some pretty kind of weird things that they were. They were almost a cult.
They were.
In their practice.
Monastic in many ways.
Yeah. There'd be a lot of similarities. So, you know, it was kind of the 130s that they got started, B.C. And then when the Romans came in 68, they were gone. So they were destroyed. All the building was destroyed. So we have kind of that period of occupation. And then they kind of grew and stuff. What's really weird, and I'm getting ahead of myself, is, again, there was some strictness. I mean, there was a little bit of Pharisee in there and some other things. But they basically used the same place, which was the proper distance away, for the whole time of occupation. They didn't really move to different locations for the latrines. So what ended up to happen is the worst thing you could do is be living there, because everyone for 100 years went to the bathroom in the same place, a great way to spread disease. So that actually they could look at the bones and stuff, and I mean, basically they got less and less healthy the longer they lived there. But anyway, what this did is, before the Dead Sea Scrolls, you've got to go to like 1000 AD to get the oldest Old Testament manuscript. Because the practice was, when it got worn out, you know, it was buried, it was basically lost. It wasn't kept around. And the only reason we have them that old was that where they were being kept in Egypt is a wall got in place, so that a bunch of these got forgotten. So anyway, moved us back. Some 500 Old Testaments. The only book of the Old Testament missing is Esther. These are the two guys. They say young shepherd boys, but I don't know what a young shepherd boy-ish to me. Maybe this was in the 50s, you know. Maybe this wasn't 47. Maybe this was 10 years. But anyway, these are the guys that found it. And the guy on the right was the one who went into the first cave. Of the manuscripts, of some 800 manuscripts, 200 are biblical, some 400 are just Jewish literature, and then about 200 are sectarian. And this is the basic scroll. This is what the scrolls would be kept in, and these kind of pots would be also used in a synagogue or something like that to keep scrolls. And they even, the Kim, where they made these, you know, it's there in the settlement. So here's the set of caves, and this is where a geologist gets kicked in. There is the limestone caves, and there are the Merle caves. The Merle caves were pretty easy to cut out and stuff. So those are where people tended to live, or they would change. However, the limestone, which really should have been easy enough to cut them, they really didn't cut into. So, this is really a good picture. You see there is the marl rock, and there's the limestone. So even though you're not a geologist, you can kind of look at it and say, oh yeah, those are two different types of rocks. And the interesting thing too is that the Merle caves are within the Sabbath limit, 1,500 feet, whereas the limestone are beyond that. So the Merle is where people tended to live in the caves, being kind of monastic.
Sabbath distance from what?
The settlement.
Meeting place?
Yeah. So that's, Kerbet Qumran right here. And just to remind you, Kerbet means that they're not stratas. That, they can tell different building parts, but it's basically one kind of excavation. There's not multiple strata. If there are multiple stratas, it's a tell. If it's not multiple stratas, it's a Kerbet. So the first one they found was actually Cave 1, which was like kind of one of the furthest away there. 7 intact, that's where, you know, the really only intact Old Testament book was the Scroll of Isaiah. that, you know, they found parts and pieces, but that one was almost fully intact, and that was actually one of the first ones found. So these are like the different caves, and then this is what's kind of found. So first of all, they found a lot of the law, Book of the Law, the Torah, the first five, the Pentateuch. So there's a lot of those. Psalms is a lot. And actually, if you look, when we go down to Egypt and look there in the dump where all the worn-out scrolls and stuff were dropped, Psalms is one of the most prevalent that's found down there. But the others is like Daniel, Isaiah 21. So Isaiah was very important to them. And why? Messianic nature. They were waiting for the Messiah. And it just, it helps you get a feel for that time period. If you really kind of look, even if you look at their sectarian, even though, you know, it was kind of like, it's, when people were starting to read it, it sounded a lot like John. So, you know, they were thinking, well, John had to be later because they weren't writing and talking like that. But then when they saw the Dead Sea Scrolls, they said, hey, John got it all from the Essenes.
Can't win.
You can't. You cannot win. So anyway, but Daniel 8, so the prophetic books were there in pretty good numbers. And so realize part of the challenge is that you are literally looking at fragments for a lot of this. Mm-hmm. So it's like you're looking at, okay, we know these words are in this book. And so we find two or three words, we try to put them together, whatever. So this particular cartoon is very, very accurate of what they've been challenging. And so there's the ruins of the community, kind of again in the desert. Here, actually, this one is, these are how some of the scrolls were, so not in the best of shape. The best preserved ones were actually bat dung on the top, which kind of sealed those lids and preserved them. So this is how they were, that they would be a parchment, leather. They'd be rolled up, the little leather strip here, and then they would have the tassels. So those were found. And in one of the caves, all they really found were a whole bunch of these leather strips. And so they kind of thought, this is where this guy had the job of making all those little leather tassels. Just some of the importance. Like Isaiah. Daniel even worse. But that there's at least a copy that's 100 BC, maybe 125 BC. Some put it on 150. So, you know, Isaiah. That even if you're saying Isaiah, all this composition, all this stuff was written much later, you have a problem. Because Isaiah talks about crucifixion, talks about all these things about the Messiah, that's still 130 years in the future. So how do you explain? And that's where messianic prophecy, you look at, again, if you remember kind of when we're doing our case, or kind of part of our case for miracles, why miracles happen. We know they happen, was because critics are willing to admit Paul wrote some letters in 50 AD, Jesus 30 AD, 20 years. If you're not a crook, he talks about the resurrection. They make a big deal that he doesn't talk about Jesus' miracles, but he talks a lot about the resurrection, and that's a powerful miracle. So you take the miracle of resurrection, you bring in the messianic, which had to, back in time, Dead Sea Scrolls helped show that, you're stuck. Miracles happen. We don't have them today, but, the written evidence and stuff, you're pretty well forced. So here's kind of the history, here are the rulers, and here are some of the books. So this is your Maccabeans, your Hasmoneans, So, like the book of Isaiah, you know, they have it going back into the 300s and stuff some, but, you know, at least based on the handwriting, they pretty well hang 125. And here is really the bizarre thing. I hadn't realized this. I had always thought carbon 14 was linear. It's not. It has plateaus. And guess where one of the plateaus is? It's in this time period. Carbon 14 is really useless because for a couple, 200-300 years, it's a plateau. So you get a carbon 14 rating, it's any time there, you know, you're 100 ADs, so you're really saying, hey, I can get a good carbon fix on this. You can't. It's plateau. So, anyway, so.
It bounds it to that period.
Huh?
It bounds it to that period,
yes.
But it's not down to
no,
10,
you can't
10
get
years,
to
right?
within 20 years. Right. You should, I mean, potentially have been able to get it pretty close, because that's really not too old for carbon 14, but it's like a 200-year window. So you do the
some
carbon
14. Environmental happened.
Yeah. Which is weird. Yeah, I would love to understand why that 200 years. Again, I just think God kind of plays with us to make sure that we have faith. Okay, so here's the Dead Sea. Here's Qumran. You know, not really a place you really want to live, but that's seclusion. That's what the Essenes wanted. Kind of, again, a closer. They're showing the caves 1 and 2. The first one's found. Here is what the structure looks like today. Here's kind of, this is the cemetery where they've looked at a lot of the bones and said, boy, these guys got real unhealthy. Several different groups. Here's cave 4, which you can just kind of walk out and see the easiest. Here's kind of a drawing to give you a better feel, again, of that. But again, cave 4. Here's a reconstruction. A lot of water. The Essenes very much into purifying. So they really used a lot of water. So a lot of water coming in.
Which means they must have been really good at managing it because there's
there's
not a lot around. Just it's not like they're next to a river.
I mean, but to be a Mecca, it's got to be set up so that it's moving, that it's living water. So, I mean, here they have an aqueduct coming in from the highlands to bring it in. And then they have some pretty serious cisterns. And they can set up, you know, they can have it come out of the cistern and move down so they get the living water requirement. Here is showing you again kind of the cemeteries, showing you the cave set up and where the community is. Now, let's see, I think it's cave 4. I'm jumping ahead of myself, but we're running out. Potentially we'll run out of time maybe. But it's like one of the caves, I believe it's cave 4, it's almost like they threw the scrolls in. So it's like the Romans are coming, and they want to protect these. And so they're just tossing them in. They're not random, much less the more like cave 1, very well organized. But cave 4, I believe it's cave 4, very chaotic. Here is one of the Mekvas, and also evidence of an earthquake. So they had an earthquake in 31, took them a while to kind of rebuild and stuff, so you can kind of check your structures and you know your structures based on that. But they did not fill this in and make this a house like they did with the cut rock pool of this morning. Here, you can go to this website, they have a whole nice model, you can move around, you can take a whole tour of the place. And this is sort of where they have stored. Again, they would use those boxes for storing scrolls as far as, hey, I need to pull one out. And then here is the making process. So they would take the leather, they would sew it together and make a scroll. And, you know, it's like, especially with the minor prophets, that, you know, it's kind of, they're always, you know, it was like the Book of the Twelve. So they took all of the minor prophets and it was in kind of one scroll. Kind of there, again, you see sewing together. Here they're setting, and here's kind of the table, and they have found that table. This is the scriptorium, so this is one of the places where they did that kind of work. Here is kind of showing you a picture, again, of it. Not necessarily a lot of light, but where they would work to make these. They found at least four inkwells, and actually it's very unusual to find that many inkwells in like just a regular place. There was a lot of people said, oh, it was a farmhouse. But you go to a farmhouse, you're not going to find four inkwells and some other stuff. So, but here they would write wood sticks, sharpened. And here is actually the benches. So here, kind of these benches right here that you see, these were found there. So this is where they would kind of work and do their work. And then again, kind of giving you a view of the inkwells. Here's a modern dude writing in an old-fashioned way, so kind of the stick. And actually, I think the Jews still, that's how they do a Torah. They still do it with ink, that kind of wooden pen and stuff, if I remember right. It was really interesting. They had a robot do it and stuff and said, oh, that's nice, but that's not the way we do it. You know, we do it by this fashion. This is kind of showing the style, and this, they use the term paleo, Hebrew, they'll say paleo, so it's kind of like you read it, and they're kind of saying, oh, well, like, these are books, you know, in transition before, like, the Masoretic that we have. It's the handwriting. It's not that the Old Testament is in transition, so that this is a paleo version of what we have, that there are, very, very little, we'll look at some of the examples, very little differences between them, and primarily it's scribal eras. It's not changing the text, per se, the meaning of the text. What is interesting, there's so much we don't know about the transmission and copying or so of the Old Testament at this time period. The Dead Sea Scrolls has helped us. What we really have today is the Masoretic, which we've already said was almost 1,000 years, very little difference. But just like we have different versions, right? ESV, New King James, there'll be some word differences and stuff. And you go back to the Isaiah of 125 B.C., and then you go and look at Isaiah 60 A.D. The Isaiah 60 A.D. is very Masoretic. It's very much word, the word matches up. You would say this is a Masoretic version of the Old Testament, whereas the 125 appears to be a different version. But again, we just don't know enough. And again, by version, we mean just like King James ESV. That you have that. It was like with the New Testament, there's Alexandrian, Roman or Western. There's a kind of a couple of versions or trend that they tended to use. Here, there's what I was talking about. So so here is the largest of the graves. Kind of built up a little bit. So they talk a lot about in their writing about the teacher of righteousness. So this is thought to be about that. So here is Qumran, here's K4, here's the latrine. It's pretty distant. These guys had to make a hoof to use the bathroom. You had to be pretty determined. Although there was a latrine there, but this was the primary. This is where you were supposed to go. The area, 400-yard dash. So going a football. How many of you want to walk over a football of length, right? 1 1/3 football field length to go to the bathroom. The Essenes did. Okay, so here's, from Cave 1. These are some of the things that were found there. The war scroll, the Isaiah scroll was found in Cave 1. So, man, what a tremendous thing to find there. There's cave one. Again, kind of looking there. So, you wouldn't expect to necessarily find it just obviously. You had to kind of be right on top of it. And there, that's kind of looking out of cave one. And then, you say, okay, hey, there's stuff in the cave, right? Okay, so this was found in 47. They were still going pretty strong finding stuff in 55, 8 years later. So again, these caves weren't real easy. And the archaeologists were racing the Bedouin, because the Bedouin finds this stuff, they could sell it and make a lot of money. So there was a race going on between the archaeologists and the Bedouins, and the Bedouins tended to find more of these caves than the archaeologists. But again, 8 years, and they were still in the throes of finding these.
I guess the follow-on effect of that was they still keep popping up.
Yes.
And even the ones that they've had for a long time, they still keep putting them together and translating them. And so, it's almost like there's still lots to do.
Oh, yeah. They found a pretty nice scroll, but it was an empty one. And then all of those fragments, they've been using computers, digitizing that to try to put those together. So, yeah. And then there was a whole big thing, because what happened is these pieces were farmed out to scholars. And so the scholar would spend 50 years and, decide, yeah, I'll publish this. So it was going real slow. So there was a whole battle about getting that out and all. So that's a whole nother story, but really not with us. So again, here's column two of the Isaiah scroll. And then here you get a fill. So 17 strips of leather had to be put together to make the Isaiah scroll. 66 chapters, 17 strips there. Well, actually, they ran out 54. So, okay. There's 66 in there. Okay, anyway.
I guess the outer parts are more likely to decay.
Yeah. So anyway, that's kind of the breakup of those strips there. And then here is like a fingerprint. This is, we kind of Barak fingerprint we get all excited about, maybe. But here is a very clear the scribe who was writing this. And the thing that you know that's kind of coming up here is that, this is, we're 125 BC. We're not all the Masoretic, all of that stuff. But a lot of that was already kind of laid down. But in a different hand, they would go through and they would find, they would make corrections. So there was a great effort to be sure of the text and all. So this is chapter 6, and here, is kind of an example. First of all, this word's kind of illegible. I don't know if our scribe fell asleep or, the leather or something. It was illegible. And so someone went back through and put dot, 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 dots there, saying, hold on a second, this is illegible, and letting people know, we know that there was a mistake made here. But just, this is a pretty good example of the differences. There were, some 37 variants in Isaiah chapter 6. So that sounds, that's horrible. Well, only three of them caused a change in the manuscript. Or what we would have. So the Isaiah scroll, they were calling, one called to another. Holy, holy, and the Masoretic had holy, holy, holy. So got another holy in there. Verse 7 was sins versus sin. So again, you look at that, you can see, there's some, even the ones where you would do some changes, are probably more scribal in nature. Also, look here. You see, first of all, remember, they're reading this way, right? So this is chapter 5, and here is your break for the next chapter, our chapter 6. So there is a break in the text to let you know. The other thing that's kind of interesting, jumping to the New Testament, because I'm not there yet, so we're running out of time, is that there were, you know, doing public readings, a couple of ways you could do this, right? So, like, if you look at more secular writings, the way the scripts and stuff were written was not to aid the reader. So it was the reader who was sort of interpreting or, you know, putting out what was there. There were no aids to the reader to make sure it was being read correctly, the stops and all of that.
You mean like vowel hints about which vowel goes between, or
not even that.
It punctuation.
Would be, you know, hey, here's a new sentence, here's a new paragraph. It's more the punctuations because they wrote the unical, right? Remember, it's like all strung unsealed together. But it wasn't quite all strung together because they would do things like this in the New Testament also. But what is really, if you look at the New Testament text that have been found, they were designed to make sure that what was there was read correctly. It wasn't who was doing the reading. It was what was being read. And that's in the manuscripts. That's, they find these manuscripts. And we're talking, I mean, when we're dealing with manuscripts, we're not dealing with the 300s and those later where we have the parchment and stuff. For our archaeology text, you know, we're only looking at papyrus. We're looking at the early, early stuff. And that. So here again, the scribe missed a letter. Someone went back in, put the letter there. Again, just demonstrating this effort to make sure. There, I've already hit that one. Here you can see the binding, the sewing together of the strips. Again, 17 strips. Canadians, let's see. Okay, here's that string that they were showing wrapped together. This was the thongs that were used. Here is the copper scroll, which appears to be a treasure map to the temple treasures. No one's found them, but anyway, one of the more bizarre ones.
But they were kind of as a cult, if that's what.
Yes.
They were preparing to, when the wrong people were taken out, they would be ready to go
yes.
and restore the proper worship
yes.
in the temple.
That is correct. That is a correct statement.
That was kind of their overarching mission, really. The reason for preserving everything.
To restore proper worship of the temple. Which, and again, I mean, when we were talking, right, the Romans, talking about Herods, all of that in Pontius Pilate, I mean, it's like the Romans kept the priestly garments. So that if you were not pleasing to the Romans, you couldn't go in and serve the temple. Okay, there's K4. It's kind of, again, the best known because you can see it, but just thousands of scrolls, and it just kind of is there. Some 10,000 scroll fragments, some 500 manuscripts just from K4 there. And so, again, it looks like they were kind of rushed and put in there.
Were they in the rock? It looked like they had little holes in the rock.
No.
Okay.
No. That's erosion. No.
Oh.
They were just thrown on the floor.
Gotcha.
The way that they were stored in the caves properly were in those pottery.
Jars.
This is some of the... So this is the kind of stuff that's typically found in K4. That's what you've got to work the puzzle with. So if y'all like puzzles, you know, K4 is a good puzzle. Let's see. I'm sorry, we just kind of go through. Anyway, so here are some Genesis Psalms in this one. Here, Cave 8. Over 100 of these leather tabs. So whoever lived here were probably, his job was making these tabs. So he would sit in the cave making tabs. Okay, so anyway, that's part of just rush through those last part to get the New Testament. So there was a movie video, Fragments of Truth. The number one reason you would buy it is if you want to see the places where all of these papyrus are. It's not a bad thing. There's a couple things he gets kind of off track, but it really, really does a good job of showing you where these are at, where they're located. So we have these papyruses because of Greenfell and Hunt, these two guys kind of recreating it. They found a dump the size of a football. So this was the dump for the city. And this is an out-of-way town. This is not some major metropolis. This is podunk Egyptian town of this time period. And so the trash goes from about 200 AD to 600 AD. So about 400 years, people dump their trash out here. So here are the guys digging through. Here they're looking, peeking out these fragments of papyrus. And that's the basic dump. And here they're going to town on it. That's the way they did archaeology back then. And they're still going through this stuff. So 1897, over 100 years, they still haven't gone through everything. Here, the very, very first piece they found was from Matthew. So here they look and they say, hold on a second, there are papyrus here. And the first one they pull out, even though Bible text isn't the predominant thing that's in the trash heap, the first one that they pull out, at least the story goes, was from Matthew. So this one, I mean, first one discovered was from 250 AD, so about 200 years after. Now, we, at least no one is willing to admit that we have any manuscripts from 50 AD to 100 AD, no autographs, nothing there, that really it's about 125 AD to, you know, 250, 300 AD that we have this papyrus. There are only about 400 papyrus that fall into this period that are therefore our most early text. Before here, you know, we have about 400. It was like, I think, less than 10 somewhere in these slides. So the majority have come from this site. You can see kind of some interesting scribal. Here, this is the same document. So here they're writing what's called chancery script, kind of crammed in there. The second line, they go to unical. And the third line is a pseudo-epic line in large, round unical letters. So in three lines, there's kind of like the scribe is trying three different ways before he kind of says, I know. So, you know, is this a practice document and stuff? But there was an art. You'd have to figure out how many of these pages you had to have to kind of come to it. Also found, here is a certificate of pagan sacrifice. So remember, emperor worship, Christians, you know, you get killed or you sacrifice. So actually here is a receipt showing that, yes, even though I said I'm a Christian, I have made my pagan sacrifice, so don't punish me. So, again, it's not core to what we're talking about, but it is talking about the Christians of that time period. Here is an order to go arrest a Christian. There are also some, I mean, there's so many of these little stories and stuff that they're there. Is that, someone came knocking on the church building and say, hey, give us your scriptures, give us your books of Christian books. And the guy says, oh, I think brother so-and-so borrowed it. So Papyrus 45, this is the Chester Beatty, and it is the Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, and Acts. So it's kind of that, you know, it's four Gospels plus Acts, but hey, Luke was involved with Acts. And what's kind of interesting is, there's some, you read so much about the critics slamming all this stuff. There's also guys out there doing some really good basic ground research showing the critics are like absolutely totally wrong. Because they want to say that other than the four Gospels, that all these other Gospels were just equal. Well, in none of these papyrus that they have found, if you look at the page count, none of them, none have been found that included any of these other Gospels. And so we're talking, I mean, 3rd century, 200s, 250. So, I mean, those are out there. And it's like the writings of Irenaeus, some of these guys, within 25 years of when they did the writing, they've been found in the trash heap here. Okay. That just gives you a really close picture of what these things look like today. You know, preserved, but not really preserved the best. They were in the garbage heap. For papyrus, any of those who don't know, it's actually a triangle. And then they would slice that. And then they would go back and forth on those. Average book, about 450 pages. There are some 5,800 Greek manuscripts, and that moves you into the papyrus and all, and the parchments and those, not just the papyrus. The unicles, okay. That's the difference between papyrus and parchment. Again, just giving you a feel for that. What I really, kind of one of the things to me that is, I think, an important point, and one that I kind of questioned when I first watched this Fragments of Truth, and then I kind of did a little more searching because I had heard this. But what they found, okay, they're digging in there, and about five or six times, they would find, like, this collection of 20 scrolls. And at least in one particular one, so, you know, this is like 4th, 5th century, so 300s to the 400s, but the scrolls were written in the 1st to 2nd century. So they're about 300 years old. So a lot of times when you read about how Christians did this, we think of the papyrus, it gets used, and we get tossed. But what these guys argue, and I mean, that this is our best body of data of early how papyrus were handled, it wasn't unusual for these stuffs to stay around for 200 or 300 years. So, you know, one guy was really into this philosopher. These were like philosophers. And so, you know, the kids after a couple of hundred years really say, we're not going to read this stuff. And so it goes in the garbage heap. But it had been kept for several hundred years. And so you also look at Qumran, right? 68 AD destroyed, but we've got Isaiah 125 BC. Okay, long time. Pompeii, they have found, looking at burnt scrolls and stuff, some 100-year-old fragments. And so what you come to is, well, first of all, 40 lines out of 2,000 or 20,000 of the New Testament, we really have kind of questions about that. So, I mean, again, excellent transmission. The way it was transmitted is having whole bunches of copies come to us. Way, I mean, I thought of it until really I saw this movie, is that, again, you have these copies, copies, copies. What the authors, or the guy that puts this down, Craig Evans, argues is that, okay, we have evidence of 200 years keeping a document around. I have not searched out the places, but there's some early church fathers who claim they saw autographed copies. Okay? So if you look at long usage, and again, you get an autograph, you're going to kind of keep that around, right? Or even one that's, you know, just one or two prints down. So, you know, these things are written in that first century. Well, if that document stays around for 200 years, then when we're writing the major codexes and stuff that really we base all of our stuff on, those documents could still be in play for referencing. Okay? So we don't know for sure. We don't have all of that history. But we have some evidences of manuscripts being kept for a couple of hundred years. Again, podunk town in Egypt. There's no reason that to say that that's abnormal or whatever. And so that really, I think, changes when you kind of think of this, even though this is a plausible transmission and we have very good evidence that this works, of a copy only being used 20, 25 years, tossed, and that, I mean, we look at the parchments and stuff, and we see lots of comments, lots of notes and stuff, you know, where they're doing comparisons of text and using that as a major text. So, you know, that gets us to like 350 AD. So 50 AD, you know, 200 years, 250 AD, there's mainly maybe 100 years and we already have parchments in play there. So there is, actually, these guys argue, and I mean, there is reasonable that autographs or close to autographs still existed when some of the manuscripts that we have still exist that could have been used in doing the comparisons. So, to me, that's pretty amazing. It could happen. It didn't always happen. So there, we made it. And we're done. Y'all made it. You have journeyed, right? But we're at a finish. So, thanks.